the Nonprofit Podcast, powered by DonorBucks.
Welcome to the Nonprofit Podcast. I'm Kara, fundraising coach at DonorBucks. We're here each week with practical actions you can use today to increase donations and take your nonprofit to the next level tomorrow. Raising more money, especially at giving season, depends on an outbound ask for money. It can strike fear into many nonprofit leaders, founders, and fundraisers, though, and sometimes it's hard to write copy that converts and inspires donors to engage with our organizations. But if you're not asking, someone else is, so it's time to learn what works and what doesn't. Kara Schmid joins the Nonprofit Podcast today. Kara serves as senior content writer and strategist for DonorBox and has experience in both business and nonprofit communication and marketing. She has several successful fundraising and communication campaigns under her belt and shares some of her best practices for writing appeals with us. So welcome, Kara. So glad you're on the podcast today.
So excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I love writing appeals. I love talking about them, and I'm so excited to hopefully, you know, share some good tidbits today.
Well, I'm so glad you are too. I know that we've spent a lot of time together talking about that lately because it's what our organizations are asking for. Appeal writing is a must-do this time of year. And why is that? What do you think?
So appeal writing this time of year is more crucial than any other time of year because 30%, at least 30% of all giving actually happens in the month of December. And actually more than 10% of that happens in the last day of the year. The last three days of the year. So I think a lot of people tend to think that that biggest day might be Giving Tuesday, but it's actually those last 3 days. And also this time of year, you know, people are really in the giving spirit. It's the holidays. They want to give back and make a difference. And, you know, kind of on that selfish side of things a little bit, they're starting to think about tax breaks because the year is coming to a close. So that deadline is getting closer. And also everyone else is talking about it. So especially on places like social media where you can use hashtags, it's a really good time to jump on that and really join the conversation to spread awareness for your own organization.
Last week, we talked about direct mail on this podcast and the importance of using it as an anchor in a fundraising campaign. And if you spend all that time writing a good direct mail piece, how else can you ensure that it's not going to go to waste?
Wow. Well, I fully understand that because I know sometimes it feels like it can take weeks to get that direct mail piece just right and get all the approvals you need. So definitely don't just use it and then forget about it. You want to be able to syndicate that content. And by that, we mean you want to be able to use those bits and pieces of your direct mail piece. Take those best nuggets and find that golden thread message that really can flow throughout what we call a multi-channel campaign. So you can, that means that you can rework those nuggets into emails, social posts, phone scripts, event programs and scripts, website copy, copy for your giving page, ad copy, all of these channels that make up this multi-channel fundraising campaign. So this is not only going to save you time because you're reusing that content. And by reuse, I don't mean copy and paste. You need to still adjust it for, you know, each channel and each audience. But it actually can take 7 to 12 touch points before a donor even gives. So it's best if they're seeing that same message from different angles anyway. So yeah, definitely take that direct mail copy and repurpose it just so A, you're saving money and or time and money a little bit. And also you're bringing in more funds because you're reaching those donors in multiple ways.
And we shared a stat in a course that we're teaching about multi-channel campaigns. And what is it? They convert readers to donors something like 300 times more effectively than just one channel. Yeah, you need to be repurposing that content for sure.
Exactly, because that message is going to resonate with them if they're seeing it not only more than once, but in more than one place.
Yeah, well, we all do, right? I think that's how we all function. You know, if I see an ad one time, you know, it's kind of in and out, but usually by the fourth or fifth time I've seen the ad, maybe I go and purchase something or attend something. And it's the same in fundraising, right? Yeah.
Definitely. Take it from those, you know, anytime you go on Amazon, or I know it happens to me with Old Navy, Target, anywhere you go online. And if you have something that you clicked on and looked at, and then all of a sudden it appears in an email in your inbox or in an ad on your Facebook. Yeah. That's happening for a reason. They know that that works. So why don't you should be using it too as a nonprofit?
Yeah, not the nonprofit sector can really learn a lot by watching the retail sector.
Definitely.
And they're spending a lot of money in research and figuring out what works. So we might as well learn from them and use some of those best practices too.
For sure.
So we've talked about email appeals. We've talked about mailed appeals. Mm-hmm. How are they different from each other? Because I think sometimes it would be easy to, like you said, just copy and paste your mailed appealed copy into an email. But how would you customize that a little bit for the channel?
So that would be way easier, wouldn't it? And somewhere when I was first starting with syndicating my content, I actually copy and pasted, but I edited from there. So I remember I would have that meat of that letter and I could still, but then I would chop and adjust words. So emails are definitely shorter for one. That's a big one. And they're usually a little more casual. And then also, it's something we didn't really talk about, but you don't really want to put images in your mailed letters because remember, you're writing like you're writing to a friend and you probably wouldn't slap a couple of sad puppy images. I mean, maybe you would, but probably not to just a letter to a friend. It'll feel a little more corporate. But in email, this is the great place where you can put those images in. Also, I recommend if you can do a super powerful video. Because that'll speak really loud. A lot of people love to watch and share videos. And you can also include goal meters and other things that you can't put in a letter. What I also love about email is it is more affordable. So while you might have the budget to only send one letter, you can send a lot more emails throughout your campaign. I actually recommend usually about 3 to 5 emails in a campaign. And you're able to express more urgency because, you know, you send a letter, it might take 2 weeks to get there, especially with the way postal delays are going right now, and it's just going to get worse towards the end of the year. So get them out soon. But emails go out, they hit the inbox, right? You know, pretty much right after you hit send.
And then for social media, how do you syndicate it into social media as well?
Oh, yes. Social media. So it's kind of like you start with a letter and you just keep shortening it and shortening it and shortening it as you go through. So social media is going to be even more casual. It's going to be even shorter and it's even more visual than email. So we have actually, there's a stat that it's like Facebook posts with a visual element. So whether that's a meme or a GIF or a photo or a video actually get 2.3 times more engagement. And by engagement, I mean clicks, likes, comments, shares, all of that. So that's 2.3 times more likely if it includes a visual of some sort. So definitely make sure you're doing that. So the way you can really take that letter and break it down is I actually like to break a story into small little tidbits and just kind of build it across, whether it's, you know, a Giving Tuesday story. So you're telling a story across a day, just kind of build that suspense and people are going to come back to check, you know, on that story. And then it also gives you more chances to show more visuals and also make sure you're including that call to action again in every single post. And you can really, what we said earlier was definitely make sure you're using hashtags. So again, remember I said you can join the conversation this time of year, especially on days like Giving Tuesday or Giving Season, anything like that. Try to make up a hashtag for your campaign so that you can apply that to all of your campaigns, but also look up some of those big hashtags that are what they call trending. So are really being used by a lot of organizations, because then you're going to be able to join that conversation and your post, that algorithm, that lovely algorithm that we love so much in social media is going to grab those posts a lot quicker.
Okay. When we're talking about appeal writing, what are three? Let's just start with three. What are three must-dos that you would share for a nonprofit who's starting the appeal writing process?
Only three?
Only three.
Okay. Let me think for a minute. Oh, okay. So first of all, I would say, let's start at the top of the letter. I would say, or any appeal really, this can apply to email as well. personalize your appeals. So you want to make it sound like you're writing to a friend. You don't want to sound super corporate, right? You want your donors to feel like they're talking to a trusted contact. So one of the best ways you can do that is use their name. Definitely in the salutation and maybe even in a couple of places throughout your letter if you can. You know, Kara, if I was writing a letter to you, I'd probably say, hey, Kara, right? I probably wouldn't say, hey, friend. Hey, podcast leader. How's it going?
I would respond better if you used my name. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. So, and it's the same way with your donors. And then also you can take that personalization one step further by segmenting your target audiences. So that can be by giving history. So, you know, your last year, but unfortunately not this year, those libunts, or new donors, or your bigger donors, or anything like that. Or then you can also look at maybe you have a set that you know are parents, or you have sets of people that tend to give to one program over the other. You can actually personalize your letter for these segments. So especially with the programs, you could focus an impact story and you can focus that on that program, because people are going to be more likely to give if you're targeting them with something they truly care about, and they're going to feel a little bit more like you actually know them and they're not just a number on your mailing list or a name. So that brings me to, I guess this would be point two. So engage your reader. This means that you want to bring them in and make them want to read, keep reading.
Yeah. So follow the letter, right? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So start that with use a balance of you. So if I'm going to give to someone, I'm probably not going to give to the organization that's like, we save the animals and we build this school and we do this and we do that. If I see something that's more like, you saved this dog from homelessness, or you helped build this school for children, I'm probably going to give more because I'm feeling like my gift is truly making a difference. And this is especially coming down to, I know I've seen examples, and Kara, I know you've shared examples in other places where it's like, help us reach our fundraising goal of $30,000. And I'm like, I don't care about helping you reach your fundraising goal. I want to help people or animals or places. So definitely make sure you're using that you, and we call that donor-centered language. Remember that people give to people, not organizations.
Right. Yeah.
And because they really want to see that impact, that's where those real stories come in. So make sure you find this powerful beneficiary story. And going back to syndicating your content, you might already have a really good one on your blog that maybe you haven't shared elsewhere. You don't have to start from scratch here either. So that's way better than sharing data. I know that it may be tempting to put in the percentage of people that improved because of your program or the number of animals you saved last year, but those numbers are better for your annual report or a newsletter. Here's where you really just want to show impact with a true story. And then also to keep those readers engaged beyond just the story. So kind of getting into more of the science of a fundraising appeal a little bit. You actually want to use super concise language. So don't use jargon. You're not writing to your staff, right? You're writing to someone that might not know a ton about your organization. So you need to write like that and make it easy to read. And also one of my very favorite, and I know I'm bunching a bunch into my three must-dos, but that's okay, right? Make sure that you're bolding and underlining or using italics to move a reader through the appeal. So I like to say my personal favorite is bold, but again, underlining and italics works as well. You bold certain parts of the letter that still tell a story by themselves, by those pieces, so that those skimmers still get exactly what they need, and make sure your call to action is also in bold too, which that brings me to my third point, make the ask. So many organizations I've seen just kind of tiptoe around the ask. And I know it can be really, you know, it's hard to build that confidence to make the ask. And it can feel a little uncomfortable sometimes because you are asking for money. But your donors don't know what you want from them unless you tell them. So make sure you make the ask and actually include it, you know, 2 to 3 times in your appeal or in your emails or wherever you're writing it.
And I think as fundraisers, sometimes we're uncomfortable making that ask. And I know I've received a letter that I've used in an example sometimes in the class, and it's a beautifully written letter, but nowhere does it ask me to give now. It gives me some suggested dollar amounts, and it's a very, very soft ask. But I think I would have preferred to have seen, you know, would you give $50 at this time because this will happen? Just a really clear ask. So let me just recap kind of what you were talking about. So the first one, kind of top of the letter down, personalize it. Personalize the two, you know, dear friend, that's never really acceptable. Right. So dear Joe, something like that. Write like you're writing to a friend. And letters that do that and emails that do that usually have a better performance rate. And then you were talking about engaging the readers. So using some donor-centered language, concise language, and then using some bolds, some highlights, and things like that to allow the skimmer to quickly get the big points of the letter or the email and then clearly make the ask, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here's a question we sometimes get. In fact, we've gotten it a couple times this week. Organizations sometimes send an appeal letter with their impact report or their annual report. And a few organizations have asked us, hey, is this a good idea?
Short answer is no.
yeah.
But it's really best to focus on the impact of, but in an emotional way. So tell that story. Whereas your numbers, it kind of draws a different call to action a little bit. And you want to keep the focus on in one area. If someone has too many call to actions or too many places to look. So if they can't tell if you want them to read about your impact, you know, your numbers, or if you want them to give, they're probably going to do the thing that doesn't make them give money, right? They don't want to do anything that costs them anything. And I've actually, from personal experience, we tried putting in the percentage. I think it was some percentages of how well our programs were performing, you know, 98% of people saw increased something or other. And that actually performed out of the several years I was with that organization. That was the direct mail piece that performed the worst, was the one that had all those stats in it.
Had all the numbers. It's distracting. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was kind of similar to that, was like the impact report in there.
I mean, the purpose of the fundraising appeal letter or email is to ask for money. I wonder if that's somehow rooted in our fear of asking for money. So we soften it up a little bit. I don't know. Maybe something to explore.
We try to say, look how awesome we are. We promise we're so great. But you really want to make that ask. And remember, there's other organizations that are going to be making that straightforward ask that are, you know, you're kind of, they're your competitors right now. You're kind of fighting for their fund, for your donors' funds. So you don't want to be the org that's not making the ask, because then the donor might not give to you. They might give the other one.
Excellent point. Okay. So organizations are asking donors for support all the time. The question we often get is, how do I communicate to younger donors? You know, we're talking about mailed appeals and email appeals. Are younger donors engaging this way? Do we communicate with them differently as opposed to somebody who has been sending in a check for 20 years to the organization?
Sure. So I definitely think that you really want to look at each of these segments in a little bit different light. So I do think that you can still send a physical letter to young donors. It's definitely the older demographics that are getting hit hard with those. So you might actually slip in there, because not everyone's sending letters to younger donors. But what you want to make sure you're doing is offering multiple ways to give. So while a younger donor might still be interested in reading a letter, they're probably not going to send a check. I know that twice a year I have to write a check, I have to go tear my house apart to find my checkbook because I don't know where it is. and I'm sure that that's the same for a lot of people across age ranges now. So make sure that you're including a QR code as well as a link to your giving form, that you can even create a unique giving form for the specific campaign, so you can track those gifts. And also you can add UTMs, which are trackable links, and Google Builder has a UTM builder so that you can track even, you can use a different tracking code for each letter. So you can see if those younger donors are giving via letters. Also with young donors, that more casual language, I also recommend smaller ask amounts, just because they tend to not have as much disposable income as others. And you can also consider telling stories. I would tell stories about people the same age or younger. That'll resonate if you're telling those impact stories. And then younger donors will probably also be better reached as well with those email follow-ups as well as social media. So you can definitely still reach them. Like I said, just make sure you're offering them more ways to give other than just a check. But it's still important to include that check option because you do still have donors that are giving that way. No one's going to fault you for having, you know, two or three ways they can give. They're just going to fault you if you don't ask them to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would not include those ways to give in the copy of the letter though, right? Yes. So a separate response device or...
Yes, exactly.
Excellent. And then returning donors, you would want to communicate to in a different way as well, as opposed to a prospective donor or non-donor.
Exactly. Yeah. So new donors, you're probably in that letter copy, you're probably going to have to tell them a little bit more about what you do. Again, make sure you're trying to use that you versus the we. You can do a balance. Some we's are fine. It's fine. You're probably going to have to describe your mission a little more and focus on what a new donor could do for your organization. And you'll probably need to start with smaller ask amounts there too, just because they haven't given to your organization before. You know, if you're asking for $5,000, they might be a little, oh, what? But for returning donors, you can definitely speak to them and more definitely use that donor-centered language there, because you can really show them how much of an impact they've already made and how much more they can do. Again, you don't really have to spell your mission out quite as clearly in these because they should already know what you do. You can focus more on that impact. And I also suggest upping the ask amounts a bit here, especially if you can access gift history and that's somewhere else you can personalize the letters. You can use those variable fields and, you know, ask that lowest amount should be their average gift amount and then include some stretch gift asks in there as well. And that just means some higher amounts that they might have to stretch to give. But again, if you don't ask, they probably won't give it to you. But just be yourself and be authentic, be confident. Remember, your work matters and you're passionate about it. And this will naturally come through in your writing. As long as you keep writing, like you're writing to a friend and telling a story, it'll be good.
Be authentic, be confident, and believe in your mission and it will come through. Well, that's really helpful. You know, I think moving into giving season, we need to think beyond just a direct mail letter and how to syndicate that into a conversation with our donor and still make it seem very personal and relevant to that people. And that'll help organizations stand out. That's the number one thing that we hear, especially this time of year, is how can I stand out among the noise? And it sounds like it's authenticity, telling a good story, and being very personal as can be, you know, depending on the media. So thank you. I appreciate your feedback and expertise on that. I think it's going to help a lot of organizations this year end.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love talking about it. I love writing appeals, and I'm so excited to start seeing some of your work and all these organizations. I'm really excited, and I hope that what I shared can help even just a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, it helps me too. So thank you. And like Kara said, writing good fundraising appeals is a little bit art and it's a little bit science. And there's a lot of data out there on what works and what doesn't. And so sometimes they're not logical. They don't make a lot of sense, but Kara helped break some of these down. And together we created a course that helps explain these a little bit better. And we're excited to invite you into joining us for a deeper dive into appeal writing. Like I mentioned, we just launched a course called Asks That Engage, and it's an appeal writing course that you can instantly apply to your year-end appeal writing strategy or all year long. And what it is we guide you step by step through the process of writing powerful fundraising appeals. You receive on-demand, bite-sized instruction to help keep you from being too overwhelmed. And then you get best practices checklists, some of the things that Kara shared with us about personalization and storytelling. But then we walk through some real-life examples to show you what works and what doesn't. And you also get an appeal writing workbook where you will work through your core message in a direct mail letter and then syndicate that content into some follow-up email and social media posts And you also will work with us on a structured content calendar. And Kara will help explain how we can write these things in advance and schedule and send them so that we don't forget those last couple of days of the year. And the course is only $49. So we'll share that link in today's show notes. Go ahead and click that and visit us at academy.donorbox.org. And you can get access to that immediately, and it doesn't expire.
And it's a really great course, if I do say so myself. So
you did a great job. Thank you, Kara. You did. And thank you for choosing to spend time with the Nonprofit Podcast. I hope you've left with confidence to take a small step today that will make a big difference tomorrow. And don't forget to download and review the podcast or give it a thumbs up if you're listening to the Nonprofit Podcast on YouTube. Your review is a great way to help others find us. You're here to help others, and we're here to help you. So until next time, stay inspired.
The Nonprofit Podcast, powered by DonorBox, helping you help others.